welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with those movers and shakers, the film and TV makers, the producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, film editors, sound mixers, sound designers, composers, VFX gurus. Who am I leaving out? There are so many, and you know I talked to them all. Now, took a little hiatus the past couple weeks. A couple weeks ago, I was doing interviews morning till night, and then last week I was recovering from TCM Film Festival, 16th TCM Film Festival. It was a fantastic festival. It kicked off with The Empire Strikes Back, an anniversary screening of that. George Lucas walked the carpet. He did not stop and talk to any of the press on the carpet. He did, however, speak inside, if you were lucky enough to have a ticket, to be inside the Chinese theater to hear Ben Mankiewicz talk to him about The Empire Strikes Back. But it was a wonderful festival, a lot of great presentations in Club TCM and at various screenings. There were over 80 films that were screened. I didn't see that many films this year because I was focusing on the presentations in Club TCM, including a wonderful one with Dan Perry. And Dan, you may not know this, most of you have heard of Saul Bass. Saul created all those wonderful opening film titles for years and years that are instantly recognizable from the 60s and the early 70s. Well, Dan is this generation's Saul Bass. Wonderful presentation with Eddie Muller and with Dan. And he has a new book out. I picked that up. And Dan and I made arrangements. I'm going to be doing a one-on-one interview with him in the coming weeks. So I'm excited about that. But a lot going on. Emmys. For your consideration, Emmys. A lot of that's happening right now. I've done quite a few interviews for the Cross show that I absolutely love, and it is fantastic. As a matter of fact, I'm doing interviews, more interviews on Cross from the sound design team. So you're going to be hearing those coming up shortly. But today, this is a fun show. Thanks to writer, director, and actor Rachel Suissa, who I spoke with a few weeks ago specifically for today's show, which is a salute to mothers and Mother's Day, courtesy of Rachel's new film, Greek Mothers Never Die. Now, this is based on Rachel's own life, her own adventures and mother-daughter angst, and it is a love letter not only to Rachel's own mother, but mothers everywhere. You don't have to be Greek to relate to this one, let me tell you. And what a perfect time for this film to come out and be available for all of you as it releases on May 9th, just in time for Mother's Day on Sunday the 11th. Written, directed, and starring Rachel, Greek Mothers Never Die, it is a delightful rom-com brimming with Greek passion and plenty of family drama. And it's the story of Ella, who is a late bloomer, and she dreams of becoming a singer, but she must overcome her overbearing Greek mother, Despina, who insists she take over the gyros business that Despina runs and marry a Greek man. And a lot of this, as you'll hear, is based on Rachel's own life. Ella's story begins in Greece. She's the only child of Jack, an American singer-songwriter, and Despina, a Greek, zany, overprotective gyros owner. Nick, who is Ella's only friend and who she meets when she's 10 years old, he's shy, he's nerdy looking, but the two of them hit it off. And Ella and Nick, as they grow up and their friendship turns into love, and they think there might be a future. But in 2010, the Greek economy collapses, Nick vanishes, and Jack dies. Despina and Ella have to move from Greece almost overnight to America for their survival. Now, fast forward, Ella's a 27-year-old late bloomer with zero love life. She still dreams of becoming a singer, but Despina still pressures her to take over the Giros business. During their daily fights, one day Despina drops dead of a heart attack, only to return as an intervening ghost, haunting Ella with unwanted advice and romantic guidance, especially after Nick resurfaces, and it turns out he has grown up to be a handsome doctor. See, it's not just Jewish mothers, people. Greek mothers would be happy if their daughter married a doctor, too. Everybody hears about Jewish mothers wanting their daughter to marry a doctor. Yeah, so do Greek mothers. So do most mothers. But that complicates things even further. As Nick suddenly resurfaces, Ella doesn't know what to do. She's got those feelings of abandonment after he left and she never heard from him again. But things, there's a little bit of supernatural, a little bit of intervention from the Greek gods themselves. And we have to wait and see if Ella will ultimately take control of her life or acquiesce to the hauntings of Despina. At the end of the day, Greek mothers never die is really all about finding the meaning of true love and learning how to deal with the passing of your mother. As I said, written, directed, and starring Rachel Swayze, the film also features Abby Minor in a breakout role as Ella. She is absolutely amazing. Rachel stars as Delphina. Nobody but Rachel could play that role, I assure you. Wade Hunt Williams turns in a great performance as a local guy known as the Chief, but he, a.k.a. Zeus. Simon Ray Rowley as Nick. Sophia Sutton steps in as Ella's best friend, Heather. And that's just to name a few. Cinematographer is Angelica Perez Castro, who does a beautiful job. Very clean, simple, unfettered lighting and lensing. And the editor is Justin West. And all you filmmakers out there, pay attention around the 30-minute mark of the interview. As Rachel is talking in detail about her process for hiring an editor for her film. It's really interesting, very unique. So as you're going to hear, Rachel is very passionate about this film. It is part of her and her life story. She is animated, engaging, and thoughtful. You'll hear all of that in this conversation as we break down every element of the film, starting with highlighting its universal appeal and the personal connections that it evokes for everyone. Rachel bears it all as she talks about the genesis and journey to make the film and shares anecdotes about her mother's influence, including a humorous scene where her mother actually bribes someone to hang out with her. Yes, I kid you not, you're going to hear Rachel tell you all about it. We discuss the film's casting, particularly Abby Minor as Ella, and we break down the production elements as we dive into the cinematography, the editing process, location, and a favorite highlight of mine, the use of comic book graphics as scene interstitials, as well as the importance of music to the film as it blends Greek and American themes, not just in the songs, including one about a cow. Yes, a song about a cow, but also in the instrumentation. And you can hear the musical influences, the instrumentation. It comes through in a few of the songs. So we get that blend, that true essence of Greece. And Rachel even gives us some early intel on her next film, another fish out of water tale called The American. But for now, we're going to focus on Greek Mothers Never Die. So sit back, relax, take a listen as writer, director, actor Rachel Swayze discusses her Mother's Day love letter, Greek Mothers Never Die.
Hello, Davey. This is Rachel. Hi,
Rachel. I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm very happy to talk to you.
I'm very happy to talk with you. What an entertaining film Greek Mothers Never Die is.
Thank you. I'm so happy that you liked it. Thank you.
So entertaining. And, you know, I had to laugh as I'm watching it because my mother used to always tell me, and she's not Greek, but she always used to say, I'm going to haunt you when I'm gone. And I still remember at her funeral, and I'm standing there afterwards. I was the last person standing there at the gravesite. And I just stood there and I said, well, let the haunting begin. And
oh, wow.
So,
wow. No, but it's very similar. It's very similar to what I would feel in real life, because obviously my mom is not a real ghost, you know, in real life, not yet. But I always thought that when my mom would pass, I mean, it's a joke between us. I'm like, I know. You'll still be with me in the kitchen. You're not telling me what to do, not to be oregano and not be barefoot. I mean, it's like a joke in our family. We know it's happening. It's crazy that you had this feeling in your real life, and also in the movie Ella, that is the last one standing, you know, and literally being haunted by her.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I can honestly tell you, my mother passed in 2008. Trust me when I tell you, oh, yes, the woman does haunt. I can be doing something, and then I hear her voice going, no, fold it the other way.
I really believe that. I really believe that that her energy decided to stay with you, you know, because you're not ready. It's like, no, I'm not ready to go. She needs me to tell her how to fold things. I mean, you know, it's that's what this movie is. You know, there is that sentence that's actually... I found in one of my dad's notebook that I took, there is science, and above science is the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hope, you know, and that's the link for all of us, you know? So me, I completely believe that our moms are just sticking around waiting, you know, waiting for us to be ready and then to say, see, now you know how I feel.
I was lucky because my mother threatened for years, when I'm gone, I'm going to come back and haunt you. You're not getting rid of me that easy. So it's like, okay. And then I see your film and I just started laughing because it's like, yeah, they don't leave. They do hang around.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe, I mean, there are so many movies that are coming every year. Maybe it's your mom that says, hey, look at that one. Look at that one.
It could be. But the whole premise of this, it's, and it applies to every culture, not just Greek mothers, but I think Jewish mothers, German mothers, Italian mothers. I think this just is a universal appeal and common thread, because there's nothing like a mother and they always think they know better.
Yeah, that's true. They always think that, and they always believe that they can protect us from making our own mistakes, you know? And when I'm always, you already did your mistakes, Mom, let me make mine, you know? I mean, it's all about love and protection, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the most, I think that there is also this thing of the mothers that are Latin, that are Hispanic, that are Jewish, that are Greek, you know, themselves have been... you know, they had a mom that taught her that love is linked also to fear, you know?
Yes.
If you love someone, you are afraid that this person, you could lose it. You could lose him, you know? And so they want to make, and very often, now that I become a mom, I realize that every time that my mom was saying, you know, if you walk barefoot, you're never going to be able to be pregnant. And now when I have a daughter, you know, she says to me, Rachel, you are killing your daughter now. You know, just because she's barefoot. You're ruining her life. You know, I mean, and now I really understand that she really means it. She really believes it. She's not just threatening me to make me like an emotional blackmail. She really is sure that this will, in one point, fire back at her in 15 years when she'll try to have a baby. That's crazy. Anyway.
All of these things that you incorporate into the story... And I know that these all come from your own life, and these are all things that happened to you that your mother did, and trying to set you up with a playmate on the beach and things like that. And I have seen this happen with so many people I know over the years and in my own life, more with my grandmother than my mother, I have to say. Nobody went as far as bribing anyone, though. So that's a new one, bribing somebody to hang out with me or to do something.
Yeah, welcome to my life. It's the beginning of the movie, all the descriptions, you know, all the different mothers and all the different daughters. Really, it's straight coming from my one-woman show that I did in Paris a decade ago, because that's how it started, you know. The movie started with a one-woman show because I was thinking, you know, my mom, she was a lot, but every time that I was telling the stories to my friends, I was always saying it with humor, you know, and it was making me laugh. And they were like, how can you not be angry at her? And I said, because, you know, with a mom like that, or you joke about it, or you go to a psychoanalyst for 20 years, or you joke about it, you know? And then that's how I decided to make a one-woman show. And it's all the beginning of the movie that is said by 10 different girls, really, it's just me and my one-woman show, and how I introduced my mom in my one-woman show. And I just thought, I'll keep that because it's universal, you know? And the bride book was a big thing because, you know, when I was young, I was shy. My mom was dressing me in a horrible way. I mean, I was the girl in my big breakfast wedding, see? I mean, I'm a little bit of all my characters. I was like the girl in my big breakfast wedding when she was young at school and she remembered the moussaka. Well, that was me. And so my mom, she just wanted me to be happy. And she felt, you know, she doesn't say, I'll give you money and you will hang with her. It's like, why don't you go to the movies with my daughter? Here is $200.
Yeah.
You know? I remember, like, for my first kiss, you know, when she forced the guy, you know, and the guy came to me and he said, Rachel, I like you very much, but I feel a bit weird because your mom, she said, is must you kiss Rachel before she leaves?
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, no. And the same, I mean, there is this scene, this long scene sequence between the character of Nick and the character of Ella, and I lived that scene in real. I thought, but only in my real life, I thought we were together. And then she said, yeah, I have to tell you something. Your mom, she said that if I was staying with you, you know, I would have a Testarossa. Yeah, a Corvette, because I thought Testarossa was not believable. You know? and some shares of the restaurant. And I was like, huh, so you did not love me? And she said, well, I loved you a lot as a sister. And I said, you know what's crazy is that my mom told me you were in love with me, and so I start looking at you differently. You know?
Oh, my God.
She was always meddling, you know, when I was young. I mean, when I was a teenager, yeah. But now I know it's all for love, but I won't do it with mine.
That's what makes this film so appealing, Rachel, is it is so universal. I think you could probably talk to any woman out there. Everybody has experiences similar, and they're going to connect with this film. Definitely with the character of, mothers are going to connect with Despina, to be sure.
Yeah.
And daughters are going to connect with Ella. And
this
is where your casting is so important. Number one, nobody but you could have played Despina. Nobody but you could have played Despina. Because you are the only one that really, you experienced your mother's, her voice, her actions, her intensity. And that's necessary for this role. We need that authenticity. Nobody but you could have played Despina. But then to find Abby, to play Ella, because for so much she's there and she has no makeup on and, you know, she has a very sad face. Because here's Despina, yakety, 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 yak, all the time. And it's like, kind of like, I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't, so I'm just not going to do anything.
Exactly.
It's difficult to pull that off and really show no emotion, but still have that hint of sadness and being looked down upon, or you're not good enough. No self-esteem.
Yeah.
So Abby does a beautiful job. Your casting of her is exemplary, spot on.
And you know what's crazy is that there is 400 girls that passed the audition.
Wow.
And she was my only callback.
Wow.
And Jake, my first assistant, that was also being my casting director, because it's such a small budget movie.
Yeah.
He said, "Are you sure you don't want to see other girls in callback?" And I said, "No, it's her." And you know, it was always like that for Simon, who plays Nick.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it would always be him. You know, just like I did another movie before that was a Netflix original, and it was very different. It was a Dangerous Liaison. It was a very big budget. I adapted a book from French literature, and the same Simon was the first actor that I saw, and then there were maybe 600 other actors, and I said to the director of casting, "I know it's going to be him," and he said, "Well, it's the first." I said, "Yeah, but it's the last." and what is even more funny for that casting, for Great Mothers Never Die, is that, you know, this movie, I wrote it a few years ago, and I was going to be Ella.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought in my life I would be Despina, because I was always assimilating myself to Ella.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that this movie shouldn't have been my first one. That's why Dangerous Liaison was my first one, because it was all meant to be, that I had to wait long enough so I could be myself a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be the one playing Vespina. See? I mean, so it's exactly what you say. It had to be me. That's why it went the way it went.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
People can say all they want about the movie gods. Well, you brought the Greek gods into play here with Greek Mothers Never Die. And I'm sure that they were all looking down on you as you were putting this film together. And it's like, not time yet, not time yet,
yeah.
Not time yeah. yet. Now oh, it's yeah, time. Yeah.
Yeah, they surely mingled a little bit without us knowing it and play with our destiny there. And I mean, and that movie is a small miracle in itself, because it was a very small budget.
Mm-hmm.
We did it very fast. We shoot in 17 days, you know, and it's a miracle that we could achieve a 2-hour-long movie like that, and that I could still have the heart that I wanted in the movie. So I'm very grateful for, you know, I mean, every person of the cast and crew that came along the way, it was a miracle. You know, that's how this movie is able to exist now.
You know? Well, you really lucked out with Wade Hunt Williams. He's absolutely wonderful in this film.
Oh, yeah.
As the chief,
oh, yeah.
a.k.a. Zeus. You've always got to have the king of the gods. You know, when you're talking about Roman movies or Greek movies, yeah, you got to have the king. And in this case,
yeah.
It's Zeus. And Wade,
yeah.
Wade is wonderful in the role. And he
oh,
has
yeah.
such
yeah.
a twinkle in his eye.
Actually, I created the role of Zeus for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first it was the role of Athena, and this role I had written it because years ago when I thought I would be the daughter, the way that this movie when I start from the One Woman Show to put it together in a future movie, I had met Olympia Dukakis.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very good friend of Mimi Denisi, which is a very famous Greek actress, and she supported me very much, and she was going to play the mother back then, and she said, "Let's write a movie for the three of us to be together," and I connected, it was wonderful, with Olympia, and Olympia told me, "Okay, but I want no more than 10 days, and I want no Greek accent, because that stressed me a lot. I hate the accents. It's something that I have to work a lot." I said, "No problem." And I created the role of Athena.
Mm.
And, well, you know what happened. I mean,
right.
She passed. She's no longer here. I became the mother. And I cast so many talented, wonderful actresses for that role for Athena. I could not take her out of my head. And then I see Wade that was casted by my casting director to be my husband, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's But that's a sign from the gods themselves. It's going to be just a little bit mafiosi and big heart, you know, and very funny. And wait, when he passed the casting, just as you hear him in the movie. And at the end, when I said that it was him, I said, but tell me, are you Greek? Because that's what every Greek-American, Greek-French will say when she hear an accent like that. You're Greek. And so he says, no, I'm not Greek. I said, but you're what? He said, well, I'm from here. I said, what do you mean? I'm from Texas.
Oh, my.
I'm even from Texas. And he said, okay, I can now, if I'm in the movie, I can tell you my real accent. And I was like, wow, because this man has a big linguistic talent. That's his thing. He knows how to really listen to the vowels and the syllables, and he knows to take any accent. Mm-hmm. So he was wonderful in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the pillars, you know.
And also, you didn't overlook your smaller characters, such as, I mean, Bob O'Hara as the priest is hilarious. He's hilarious.
Yes.
No, I just look, and of course you get some nice comedy out of Sophia Sutton as Ella's best friend, Heather. I mean, just all around. The fact that these supporting players do have instrumental moments within shaping Ella's life. So I like the way you've balanced that and how you've broken that down within the story.
I'm so happy that you saw all of it, you know, that you saw what I was doing, because... Oh, it's good. It makes me happy to hear that, because for me it's very important that supporting characters all always have their own intrigue, their own arc, and that they are not just here to deliver how do you say that?
A punchline or a setup or something, yeah.
Yeah, in French I would say to pass the plate to the hero, you know, they are here to just bring the hero to something else, but for me it's very important that they're all super interesting and that there is fun in playing them and that they go somewhere. That's why I'm not able to do a 1.5 hour movie. Never. It will always be from 1:45 to 2. I'm so sorry. Yes, I think that it's very important. That's what gives the soul of the movie. All those small characters. And, you know, they were all first-time actors in movies.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, I love actors. It's my thing. Mm-hmm. I love to see young actors that have potential, that have never played yet, but I know it's in there, and I'll train them, and it will get out, you know? And that's what I did for my first movie with the lead actress. She was 16 when I casted her, but I knew it was her, you know? And she came home for 2 weeks, and I told her how to act. And we did a lot of training. All the actors that you see, the priest, the custodian, the gynecologist, all of them, they are actors that play in theater on Amelia Island, the island where I live and where I shot the movie. And I cast them all, and they had their first appearance in movie. And also... Heather, she had already done small roles in short movies and things like that, but it was her first feature movie,
mm-hmm.
and she was she's awesome. She you know, in this movie, I love to play with cultural classicism that mm-hmm. we already saw in movies and that we love because that's how we grew. You know, we grew with them and this warmth. It's hard to find it nowadays, that warmth that was there before. And so I love to use, you know, those characters that feel very, like, we know who they are. They know, but we make a twist. You know, like, she is the one that is going to make the Relu King, how do we say the Relu King? The makeover?
Mm-hmm.
She does it terrible. She's not that good. You know, she doesn't have that great taste. She's hot. It doesn't always work, but she's awesome. She does it with her heart. You know, always a little twist like that, you know?
Well, I have to say one of my favorite supporting characters that you have is the custodian. He's at the cemetery digging graves. He's in the hospital sweeping up. And to have him all tattooed, he stands there and he watches. And the way that you tie in Despina's whole thing about cancer sticks with cigarettes and smoking And not giving away any spoilers, but we do find out who he actually really may be within the universe. I just thought that was so much fun, how you brought that all around together.
Thank you. You know, when I had planned that since the beginning, because for me, a movie that works is a movie that you want to watch twice.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to, if you say, oh, that was a great movie, and I said, well, would you watch it again? And you're like, I don't know. It was good. I don't know. But, well, me, my goal is that people watch twice a movie. And so, at least twice. And so what is really interesting is to see it the first time, and you say, at first, you don't pay much attention. Then you're like, what is he here? Then it's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What's the beat between the two guys? And then you're like, oh, I get it. And then you rewatch the movie, and everything has a different reading. And that's one of the things that I love to do. And so with The Custodian, what's great is that I saw him in the street.
Wow.
I saw him. and he said, hey, and I say, can you just sit down, read the line, and you don't mind if I record you, right? And he's like, what? And he said, you know, and as he looked all tough, he said, it has always been my dream to be an actor. When I was young, that's how I started. And then, you know, I had kids and life, and I never went for it. And he is so sweet and sensitive, you know, and when you see it, he's like the big boy with the tattoo. He was just perfect. It was, that's what I said to you, that everything is a little miracle.
Yeah.
Everything was meant to be, you know, yeah.
It's all those gods, movie gods, Greek gods, all looking down on this, Rachel.
I hope they keep looking down during the pre...
when it releases, yeah.
For all distribution to work, I mean, for everything to work out, because I said, okay, now you looked over the movie, so there is a movie, now please let it be an exit, you know, like an exit, how do we say, like a movie that people love to watch.
Mm-hmm. Now, you brought up something very important in every film, and that is the editing, and as you said, you can't do a film with the care that you give to your characters. You can't do an hour 45. You gotta do 2 hours. So this begs the question of how challenging the editing of this film was, because you do have so many characters. Each one does get their own little moment in the sun, and that integrates into Ella's journey. But also, you're balancing drama and comedy here.
Yeah.
And you don't want to hold the comedy so long that it's not funny. You don't want to cut off your drama too soon. So how challenging, you're working with your editor, with Justin West. What was the editing process like on Greek Mothers Never Die to find that balance? Because you do have a really good balance between the comedy and drama, with the comedy coming out of the drama.
Well, I would say that the process really starts when you write the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I write, I already edit in my mind.
Okay.
So it's like, I don't know how to, for instance, the pathos, he says, it's not your fault. And I write, cut to, poor girl, it's her fault. You know, he killed her mother. It's already written like that. So I have already the rhythm as I write. And then is what you cannot control, which is the element of surprise, which is, okay, all this is ink and paper until the actor gives his life through his body, through his soul. And so then you don't know how the actor will interpret those words, even if you have your rhythm, right? And for instance, Adi Miner, she's a wonderful actress that is a dramatic actress. She's very, very good. She could do Greek tragedy. You know, she has so much sensitivity and empathy and the talent that she would bring. She would bring the true reality of every situation. You know, and she would not be afraid to you know, to feel the hurt. And me, I'm bringing my energy is a different energy, which is, you know, Greek people, they're lost about their own drama. If not, they would be crying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we are balancing this energy, finding a way to still make all those bits, you know, and my editor, it was also his first feature movie as editor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because this movie is the movie for me of, I came here to America, created my company with Rad Pictures. It's not like Rad, like Rad, that's cool, even if everyone thinks that Rad from the 80s, but it's Rachel American Dream. That's my company. And a lot of people here that didn't know me, they just trusted in me. And for me, I trusted in them to do for the first time something that someone had never given the opportunity to do. And so when I casted my, because I casted my editor, that means I asked to several editors to edit one scene of the movie.
Okay.
You know, and that's how I chose, because I wanted to see the natural rhythm of the editor. If he had the sensitivity, why when there is a shot with two people, what makes that you're going to decide to leave one person out of that shot and make a close-up on the other one at that moment, you know? I needed to see that and the comical rhythm that they had in them. And Justin West, I thought that he was wonderful as well emotionally as technically. And I say it's the first movie as editor, because he was doing coloring and he was editing, of course, things a lot, but not a feature. And I say, let's develop the grammar of this movie together. And so he came on my island for 2 months. And we were in that room editing together, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's how we created, you know, the movie at the end. So it was challenging, but it was also wonderful because we were both growing, you know, in that process. And because me, I had to let go of what I had written, the edit that I had written in my mind when I was writing. And he was bringing his own sensitivity to it, and we really did it as a duet, you know? Now, if he wants me, he'll be my editor for life.
I like your process for how you determine who to hire as the editor. I really like the fact that you have them. They're basically auditioning, the same as an actor auditions. Yeah. You're basically having them audition, and audition with this film, with this raw footage, versus you don't want to see their other reels. You want to see what they can do with this. And I really love this approach, Rachel.
Yeah, because I believe that every movie has a different style, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You won't edit a thriller movie and a romantic comedy the same way. And if you do, there's something strange about it. You know? And each movie breathes on his own. If you look at my first movie, Dangerous Liaison, it's a very different editing. You know, it's about social media and fragmented reality between for teenagers. So how you are one foot in real life, one foot in social life, you know, and create another identity. So my editing is very different, very more fragmented in this reality. This is a rom-com about my mom where I take the time because, for instance, this movie, I know I spent a long time in Greece to paint the story. You know,
mm-hmm.
This was not an indie movie. It would probably, Greece would probably be maybe 3 minutes long top, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is an indie movie, I have the luxury to choose to make it 10 minutes in Greece. And to really show the bond between the father, the daughter, and what the mother was before her slow transformation into the Despina that died, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, for instance, this motion in the beginning is what makes work the third act.
Yes.
You know? And that makes it kind of powerful when, you know, at the end, you know the scene. So I take the time, but during this time, I'm still moving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not lingering on shots and you know, and the cinematographer, my DP, she's she's wonderful because she was able to pull it out, you know. I mean, without her, she was steady camera. She's a little, she's 4 foot tall, you know. She's super skinny and she's muscular, and she was carrying that steady cam on her 12 hours a day, and she was my DP, you know. So she meant all that happened now.
Well, I have to say that Angelica has some beautiful, she gave Justin some beautiful footage to edit. Some of those scenes at the marina with the boats and the water, they're simple, they're basic, there's nothing fancy. We see Ella and Nick sitting on a boat or there on the dock at night, but they're simple and basic, but they're clean. The framing is very pleasing. And it's unfettered, so it doesn't cloud the emotion that's unfolding.
Yeah, you know, you touch with your finger something very important here. It's this scene is a very special scene for me because all the other scenes, there is a lot of agitation. I cut, you know, there is the point of view of the mother, the point of view of the dog, tac, 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 tac.
Yeah.
And it's very, how do we say, champ contre champ. Ugh, I still don't have the, wait. You know, camera on him, camera on her.
Yeah, it's coverage. Angle, right? It's all and coverage back and forth, yeah.
Yeah, and this one, I wanted everything quiet. I wanted it very intimate. I wanted it very simple, and it's my only shot that is a continuous, you know, plan, un plan continu. That means that I don't cut back and forth. It stays, the camera just stays like that on the boat, almost for all the scenes, because it's where slowly we stay with him, go with them, dive into their feelings, and no more craziness back and forth. The mother is not here, you know, no disturbances. So that's very interesting. That's the one that because it's the more intimate of all the scenes, you mm-hmm. know, and it's the one that stayed with you. So that's awesome. Yes.
And also, we get some beautiful, beautiful shots, very intimate, such as at Nick's parents' anniversary party, and where we see, you know, Wade's character of the chief performing. And the whole party scene, it's not big, it's a smaller gathering, but it's very intimate in the way that Angelica has framed it and shot it. So you really, and then with the edit, you get this great connection of Wade singing. The camera comes in closer on him. So you've got a really nice mid two shot happening. And then you'll cut to, and even though she's a little bit shit-faced, we'll cut to Ella, who is, you can tell, she's thinking of her father at that moment. Really nice, intimate interplay from an emotional standpoint. And I really like how you and Angelica did that.
Thank you. Again, in that scene, it's very interesting because we already, you know, in romantic comedies, you see often the moment that, okay, the guy, the girl, oh, they're in that situation that they have to get close physically, you know. Okay, now we have to dance together. And we saw that in many movies. But me, what I wanted to give it a little twist, the angle for me on that was when you're in a situation, you do not just think about one thing.
Right.
In your brain, many things float, and especially when you're, you know, in this emotional state as she is. At the same time, you feel that you are attracted to the guy in front of you, but at the same time, this song reminds you of your dad, and you have these flashes of when you were young. And it's all mixed together, and the mother, you see another face of the mother, you know, I mean, so really, because this song, at first, was not even going to be a song, it was part of the movie. This was the story that the dad used to tell his daughter mm-hmm. about the cow that died, and the chief, when we discover at the end who he is, and that when she's in limbo, you know, I mean, I know people haven't seen the movie, so they won't know I say that to you. When she's in limbo, he was going to explain to her that what seems to be sometimes an unfair thing is for the best.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe the mother hadn't been dead. Now, if the mother hadn't sacrificed, time what she had in her brain, because she wouldn't have gone to the hospital and seen Nick and na-na-na-na-na. So it was a metaphor. And then when I saw that Wade is such a talented singer and composer, I got inspired. And that's how this story that my dad used to tell me when I was young, because that's the truth, it's a story that every time I thought something was in first, he would say the story of the cow and the beggar and the angel. That became the song. And it was very clear for me that it had to be connected to the past. So with Justin, we incorporated in the crucial moments, you know. And Angelica, it's one of my I love what she was able not only to do with the light, but also with the Steadicam. She's doubly talented because many DP, they are very good with light. Others have a specialty of, you know, Steadicam and camera holding and all that and the shot. But she does both. So how lucky am I, you know?
Well, and you're shooting on Amelia Island, so you've got beautiful light there, natural light to take advantage of as well. That's a gift when you have a cinematographer who understands the natural light in addition to lighting kits and setting up artificial light. I love it's just a clean way of shooting the whole film. Nothing is convoluted. As I said, it's very unfettered in how you have it shot, your visual grammar. It's very simple, and it just lets us focus on the story or a song about cows. And who doesn't like a song about cows? Come on.
Yeah, every time that it was a special screening, and when they hear him say, "Only cows," everyone always laughs. In the cinema room. But it's true that, you know, in the movie, a lot of things are suggested because I love to, you know, like the spectator to complete my painting, you know, mine. For instance, I don't know if there is, when she plays piano, instead of making an insert of her finger on the piano, I stay with her soul on her face, and the spectator can imagine all the rest of the scene.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Or the public. In the scene, when you say the gathering, it's very interesting that the party, because for me, the party is not important. I mean, the people, we are with the mind of Ella that is in this cosmic cloud and that is here without being here. She sees without seeing. Those people cross around her their life, but she's focused on what's going on with her mom, and the guy with whom she finally gave the virginity, and the rest are like here but not here. And so that's why I work a lot on close-ups, because it allows the spectator to finish himself the painting with his imagination, like when you read a book.
Absolutely.
It's gymnastic to the brain, and at the same time, when you are with the true feeling, very simple, raw, you know, intimist of the characters. So, and that's true that I love, I mean, of course, sometimes it's great to have a wide shot, you know, and to show around, and but that's true that very often I privilege being with the hero, you know, in close-up.
Now, you mentioned something important here about insets and transitions. I love the comic book graphics that you have peppered throughout the film. That animation is fantastic, because when a story like this is one that growing up, probably in the 50s, 60s, when Despina was a girl, or 70s when Ella was young, you'd be reading a comic book. The frames, the individual frames and the little bubbles of what is like around your head. And that's exactly who Despina is in the film. She's one of those comic book bubbles around Ella's head.
Yes. God, there is literally that in one of the comic frames that I draw, that I put. And it's this. I mean, for me, we are We say that, okay, there are two, it's a binom, it's a triangle, it's a love story, mother-daughter, and of course there's the romance, but we are with the eyes of a child, of Ella, that
yeah.
starts her journey as a child, and the comic book as a child, that's how her dad told her stories.
Yeah.
He was showing the comic books and the gods and all that, and so when she tells us this story, it's through her eyes.
As a child.
And connection with the past, and so I thought... Yeah, I could just do establishment shots, you know, and like the classic. But I was like, no, let's just
no.
in between acts. Basically, my transitional comic book that comes in transition every between all the three acts, you know, the opening and the three acts.
Yep.
And that's the guidance there. And, you know, I did those comic book. I met them.
I love that you went that route. And... you stick with the traditional colors, the, you know, the blue, the yellow, the reds
yes.
that are in, that originally were in comic books. Those were really, and black and white. Those are the only colors you ever saw. So you stick with that. So it really gets our attention. And because of the drawings themselves, the bubbles with what they're allegedly saying or what's in their mind
yeah.
really stand out. And that just is so wonderfully done to transition to the live action. I love that animation feature as your transitions. Just love it.
Well, it was a bet, you know, it was a risk to do it because it's not done very often.
Yeah.
And it makes me so happy to hear that from you, you know, it touches me a lot.
I just love that. Just like I love the end credits, and we're not going to tell anybody what's there except to say...
yes.
What stay through the end credits. Watch the end credits. You have to watch them. You have
yeah.
treats there. There are treats there for us. But
yeah, it's the movie that never ends. I have so many things that I want to say about this. Anyway, I like to close the intrigues. You know, I know that some movie will leave open intrigues because it's up to the... To the spectator also to make its own, was this real, was this not real? Me, I like to, you know, to put a point to say, okay, here is the truth at the end. So,
yep.
yeah. But it's true that it's funny because we have, with my husband, we have, how do we say that? That's a fight about the, but we have a debate
uh-huh.
about the ending because... He didn't want me. He said, you know what? When we finally see her becoming who she is, and she's raising her hand, and we stop on her, and the music kicks in, we want to stay there. You know, we don't want to... We want to stay and remember the feeling of the movie, and then when we go back to laughing with your payoff,
mm-hmm.
it breaks us from that. And I'm like, yes, but the movie's already 2 hours. I cannot wait 2 minutes before to put the payoff. People will turn the TV off, you know? And I'm like, I have to put that because for me, it shows that it was all real, that behind science is the sky. And that's what shows that when Ella believes, you know, in the what I call the Fight Club sequence,
mm-hmm.
she believes that all this was just because of the of what she had in her head. I mean, I said that too because people haven't seen the movie. So, well, she suddenly sees a different reality, but because it's a reality shaped with the information that she just got. You
mm-hmm.
know?
Absolutely.
And so, for a moment, we're like, holy crap, all that was like Fight Club. Like, I mean, that's my reference. But and it's not real. And suddenly, it's just because as mom is not here, the mom is not here because she achieved her unfinished business, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But because an illusion is real as long as you believe in it, and it's all about faith. So when her faith is destroyed, she starts doubting of everything she saw, and she sees a different reality that is also part of what happened, but the mother was still with her. And so you don't know. Some people will say, oh, yeah, that's better like that because I'm, you know, if not, it's too happy, you know. And but at the end... when you see the payoff,
mm-hmm.
you're like, oh, okay, I got that one
yeah.
coming now. Above science is the sky.
Yes.
So I wanted to put it. I'm interested. Maybe you can settle our debate.
Uh-oh.
What do you think?
I like the way you have ended it. Okay. I like the fact that we have that above is the sky and whatever that constitutes for whomever. I love the payoff. I love how you break it out and there are choices. And we've seen this in so many movies over the past 100 years and in books of a character who has to make a choice of which path to take, of what to believe. But you also give us here, we understand the choices that Ella has. You don't leave that hanging, but it's still open to interpretation as to exactly what she does believe.
Exactly. Exactly. Because at the end, when she sings a happy mood, she chooses to believe that there is something more. And
yes.
So she sees something more. So it's exactly that. Yeah. Yes.
No.
And Ella, see also the, I want to say something when we talked about Abby, because I have so many things in my mind. Abby, what she did also, that is something that is very minutious. People don't see it, but it's very hard to do, is that, see, at the beginning of the movie, the mother takes all the place. You know, she's like big, she's a star, she's the one that has all the focus, and Ella is almost an extra in her own life.
Mm-hmm.
She's smaller, you know what I mean? And then, so what you said, the scene at the marina, the night she dies, the mother, I mean, you see how Ella is small, like she does not expand her wings. And you see her as the shy girl next door, and the more the story goes and the more charismatic she becomes, the more big she becomes. She takes the place.
Yep.
She finally spread the wings. And she does that very subtly and gradually through all the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, when we are at the midpoint, when, it's like what I said, because I play with the structure. So at the midpoint, I say, oh, yeah, look at the star girl, mid-boy, cut to their kissing. But then, of course, there is a little crocodile there. I mean, there's a little fish. But at midpoint, she becomes no more the girl next door. She's the girl that every girl would like to be. You know?
In that one moment. Yeah, in that one moment.
Exactly. And so it's so I think that it's just I want to say that about her that she did a great job, that it was not that it's so she, you know, it's like she make it seem easy, but it was great. And also the singing, you know, she had never we trained for that movie, but she was not a singer before that.
No, she sings beautifully. As Abby embraces Ella and gets to be a stronger character and coming into her own, what you also do in your editing is that the stronger that Ella becomes, we start seeing less of Despina.
Yes. Yes. It's exactly that. You see, at the beginning, Despina is everywhere.
Despina is everywhere.
I'm glad you see that. You see everything. I like that. Yes, she's everywhere. I literally, because all the magic is done with camera, you know. I mean, there's only one, two moments that she's crossover with a hand, you know, Destina. But all the, I decide to shoot that and edit it like realistic way. So for me, to put Destina in every shot shows how big she is and how much she vampirized and how much she's hunting and ruling over Ella. And the more Ella becomes big and decides to rule over her own life, and the more Despina disappears until moments that she's completely gone. And it's like, intrinsically, I mean, people don't even think about it, you know, until she comes back. So it's exactly that. It's a tango.
You know? It definitely is. Now, the last element of this film, Rachel, is your music. What a combination of score, character motifs, and original, needle drops, so to speak. Very important. So, and the music is what really gives us an undercurrent of Greek flavor continually. And a lot of it's because of the bouzouki, which is also incorporated into a lot of the musical motifs. Really nice, nicely done with the music.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That makes me very happy. I love music. I love to sing. And it's, for me, part of, it's an emotional vector that also completes for me a painting, you know, if the movie is a painting. And through music, you know, there are so much emotions. So for me, it was very important. So there are three things. There is the music of the mother that represents the mother, that is always the bouzouki and the Greek themes and you know, this little thing all the time. And then you have Ella that dreams of New York, that is cut between two cultures, that wants to be her own singer, and that brings the most, you know, like the American music, you know. Mm-hmm. And I want to, and again, the music is a tango, because it's and the two music are there, and at the end they learn how to live in harmony. So I have a composer that is one of my dear friends, that Abraham Gomez Rosales, that composed the music, and he's very talented. He's not Greek, he's Spanish, but he knows me and my mom since we're 10 years old.
Oh.
So he knows the drill. And so he learned to, because every music was originally composed note by note, and he learned for this movie to masterize the bouzouki, which is something, it's something very hard to do. And he did it. And total, there is 62 musical pieces in that movie, because you have all the original score that he did, the original score for the mother that is linked to bouzouki. Then you have the tango chief, because with the chief it's always a tango. And then you have the romantic, more folk romantic music, which is the storyline of Ella and Nick. And then there are the songs that I wrote also. So Arapimu is a song that means my love, that I, until the last moment, I wasn't sure if I should incrustate, if I should burn subtitles, you know, to tell the English audience, the American
audience. Oh, no. The music for this film, it's not like, it's not like we're watching a music video in a foreign language and we need to see what the words are. No, this music speaks directly to the emotion of this film. So the performances and the film as a whole should be strong enough that the music is an undercurrent. And you don't subtitle your undercurrent.
I'm glad to hear that, because that's what I was going for. At the end, I was like, okay, let's stick with the heart and people will project what they want. And I was hoping it could be a music that speaks for both, you know, and for American people and for Greek people. And so I wrote that one, and Abraham did the composition, and of course the story of the bedtime story. I wrote it, and also with Wade, and Snow White. It came to me. This one came to me in a dream. There are things of that movie that you'll see that came to me in a dream, and I just literally, like the Snow White, I just write it in 30 minutes, and I sang it. I sang it by myself in the kitchen because I was alone, and this was a big acoustic there. And then I gave that one to Abraham, and I say, okay, here is my melody. Please create everything that is in my brain instrumentally. Thank you very much. And she did this.
Oh my
so each
goodness.
Each story has its own path and storyline, basically. And then there is three Greek songs in that movie that are songs that mean something to me. That it's a very small budget, this movie, as you understood, because I really wanted to shoot it fast because I wanted my mom to see it, you know? I'm making a little detour here, but when I did the one-woman show, this one-woman show, they asked me if I wanted to turn it into a TV show. So I went for a big channel in development for a TV show. And just before that, the TV show was complete, because it was about my mom and my stepdad, and it was, they were both play their own characters, but, I mean, actors, you know, and my stepdad, he died like 1 week before to be able to see himself, you know? So, my mom being super sick and older in France, and me being in America, not being able to go back to see her, because I was waiting for the green card and all this, I was like, okay, I have to do this movie now. I don't have time to ask for people in Vietnam because I want her to see it before she's a ghost.
Yeah. You know,
it was very important for me. So, so I had very detailed budget, but there was those three Greek songs. The opening song, you know, where you see the titles at the beginning, which means no one looks like you, my love. And this is for me talking and about the mother and about the daughter and about Greece, you know, that's how I projected. And that singer, Plutarchos, he's one of the biggest Greek singer, and so that was his song, and also the one of the dreams, I mean, not the dream sequence, when they are in limbo and the whole family is kind of reunited in death, that was him also. So he's the biggest star there. And then I end up on Yapanda Mazi, which is the only song I remember when I was young with my dad in his bouzouki. Because my dad passed from cancer also when I was 18 years old. So, and that was like our song. And so even if it's a very famous song, I had to end this song together. That means Yapanda Mazi, which means always together, forever. And everyone told me, you're never going to be able to get Universal and Greek, I mean, you know, to help you with the song. It's too much. And I made it. And they were so friendly and so good-hearted, and then just to how important it was that they made it work, you know. So these songs also are their own stories. So, yeah, the music for me is very dear to my heart in that movie.
Music is a universal language, so that's like the last thread that ties this entire film together for you, Rachel. Everybody understands music. So to be able to get exactly what you wanted for the emotion that you have, it's another little bit of magic from the gods.
Oh, my God. It made me very happy because, you know, I know it's there are a lot of different type of movies, and I know that many directors don't like music, actually, because they think, you know, that you don't need the music because it cuts you from the raw and the reality, and if a scene is powerful enough, you don't need music. But me, that's not how works my sensitivity. And even when I train my actors, I train them on music, you know?
Mm-hmm. It will give them rhythm with their cadence and with their delivery. But there are some films where you don't need music. Now, you don't necessarily need music with Greek Mothers Never Die, but it's that beautiful undercurrent that ties everything together. Kind of like a lullaby, almost. A comforting lullaby. Such as what Jack would sing to Ella when she was a little girl.
And yes, that song Paradise also. I was lucky enough that some people let me use their song. And that song Paradise is one of the actors that played in my other movie. And he said, of course, you can use that song. And then it was just a folk guitar song. And we modified it to, you know, with the piano, to become a father's daughter lullaby, and then to give her wings, actually, when she's older, you know, and when she finally affirms herself. But yes, it's exactly, I mean, you have a wonderful analysis of this movie. It makes me extremely happy. You know, really, thank you.
Thank you for making the film. It made me happy watching it, and it has been so wonderful getting to speak with you today about Greek Mothers Never Die. This has been a real treat, Rachel, to get to talk to you about this one.
Oh, it's been a wonderful meeting. I was very happy to meet you, and I hope that we're going to talk again in the future, you know? The movie is going is already in pre-order now on Apple TV, and if we have more than 200 pre-orders the 9th of May, that is the release day, the movie will pop up on a homepage. So that means that a wider audience will have access to discover the movie.
Oh.
Because I didn't know that. It's something I learned with our distributors. That's what they said. If the movie doesn't have 200 pre-orders, it's just kind of, you know, the indie movies, they are drenched in the middle of the 10,000 of movies, and you have to only already be tapping that name so it will appear, you know? But if people support the movie and already pre-order, it changes its life. And then the movie is going to be also for 3 special programming day at the cinema, the 9th, 10th, and 11th, because it's the weekend of Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be there with the Q&A, and I'm going to offer a present to every mother. Yeah, there'll be a little, a real gift, not emotional present. I mean, I'll give a little, I prepared little gift box for those, because it's the releasing weekend. And then after the 9th of May, it will be, you know, for a few months, it will be on VOD, on all the big platforms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the whole story of everything. Now you have all the info.
People have to, if they're in New York, yes, they need to take advantage of all of this. This is a perfect perfect Mother's Day weekend film.
I do a special screening with the Griffin Festival in L.A. I'll let you know if there is a party, you have to come.
Oh, please do let me know. Please do.
So the last info, if you need it, is that right now I'm raising for my next movie that I want to shoot this year. That's going to be called The American, and that is that I'm going to shoot this year. I'm in the process of doing that right now. So and I hope that everything will work well, and that by the fall I'm going to be able to have raised enough. And it's also a very fun story. I hope you like it.
Well, I look forward to it, Rachel. I can't wait to see. I cannot wait to see what you do next year.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. And it's going to be a very different way to also do fish out of water between the American word and the old Greek word. I mean, it's a comedy, of course, you know, because now you understand that I like to laugh.
Yes.
And I love comedies, and if it can make you think about a little deeper, it's great, but the goal is warmth and laugh, because we need the laughter in this world right now.
We sure do. Oh.
Oh, yes.
Rachel.
Well, thank you so much.
This has been so wonderful, and I cannot wait till we talk again.
Me too, Debbie. Thank you for everything and your kindness and warmth and wonderful analysis of the movie. You made my day.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Now you go have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Rachel Suisa talking about Greek Mothers Never Die, her Mother's Day love letter for her own mother and all mothers. As I mentioned at the top, the film is available for pre-order on Apple TV, and it releases digitally this Friday, May 9th, with special screenings at AMC in New York over the Mother's Day weekend. And apparently, Rachel's going to be at those AMC screenings in New York, and we'll have some free gifties for the moms in attendance at those screenings. And we all like free, because as Elle Woods once told us all, America, the land of free gift with purchase. Buy your movie ticket, get a free gift from Rachel. So, that is all the time we have today. And yes, of course, we went way over an hour. But make sure to tune in next week when I've got more exclusives coming for you. I haven't decided who yet, because I'm doing some interviews tomorrow that I'm really, really looking forward to. One is with writer-director Tim Bogart, who I've had on the show before talking about his last film, Spinning Gold, which I love beyond belief. And he now has a new film called Juliet and Romeo. So I can't talk about it yet. I'm under embargo until May 8th. But I can say I'm going to be talking with Tim, so you might hear that interview next week. But you'll find out next Monday. But for now,